Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
All right. Let's get the instrument in shape. I don't do big warm-ups. A lot of people do warm-ups. Brrr, brrr, and all that stuff. And they say tongue twisters. I don't know. I just go, all right, let's go. I even do that when I'm acting. A lot of the actors do a lot of these warm-ups. But I don't know. Just never felt my... Maybe because I'm always talking. My voice doesn't need any warm-up. I wake up every morning talking. Oh, what was that? Okay. Anyway, are you ready to go, my friend? Reggie the producer? Good. Let's do it. Put in the books. Episode number 327. I'll give you the three S's and the countdown, and you give me the music, and we'll do a podcast. How about that? Okay? Ready to go? You all set? We'll see about that trigger finger of yours. I don't know if it's still sticking or not when the music comes after I do the intro, but it is what it is, right? We live in a world of technology, so we have to live with the little quirks and bugs and whatever's going on. All right, here we go. Star, smile, strong. 3, 2, 1. Hey, it's Elton Jim Toronto, and this is Captain Podtastic. And welcome to another episode of Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic. Every Monday, a new episode is posted at WGNradio.com or wherever you go to find your favorite podcast. We are there. Where else would we be? Duh. Also, don't forget, if you do go somewhere else to find that podcast, subscribe and rate this podcast. But even more than that, the most important job, aside from listening, which is important, no question, is to get out there and spread the word. So tell your friends. Tell your neighbors. Tell your family. Tell anybody you know who listens to a podcast that your favorite podcast is Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic, and it should be theirs too. That loyalty, that devotion, oh, it's so heartwarming. Also, if you like what you hear, don't forget, go to WGNradio.com, hit the prompt for the podcast, hit the prompt for this specific podcast, and lo and behold, you will discover hundreds, literally hundreds, of binge-worthy hours of podcasts just ready to entertain your mind and your ears. By last count, there should be 326 in there just waiting for you to enjoy. But for right now, here's a new one to enjoy. Number 327. So, how does my voice sound to you? Yes, I think it sounds clear. I think it sounds strong. Hopefully. I asked the question because a couple of weeks ago, in fact, almost... 2 weeks ago, exactly now, I had some minor surgery. Really? Are you all right, Jim? Yes, I'm fine. I'm fine. But yeah, a little minor surgery. Although really, what is minor surgery? I guess there are such things as minor surgery. I mean, I've had wisdom teeth pulled. That is surgery, and it is minor because you are not put out in terms of a serious general anesthesia, if you will. Anesthesia, where did that come from? So I've had surgical procedures where things have become invasive, if you will, where a small incision had to be made. But most every other time, it's always been a twilight kind of thing. Even a colonoscopy is considered twilight, even though I don't remember anything about it. I remember being knocked out. And even for my wisdom teeth, I remember being knocked out, waking up and not knowing. But this, I shouldn't say that. Back when I was 16, I had a broken nose, and I didn't really know it. I had a little trouble breathing, but it wasn't crazy. I didn't get the black eyes like everybody always talks about. So I didn't really think it was broken. It certainly hurt when it happened, but it stopped bleeding, and I had a little trouble breathing. And so finally we did go to the doctor. They did an x-ray, and like, oh yeah, no, that's not only is it broken, but I could probably waited 2 or 3 weeks, if not longer, honestly. I was young. I was like 16 years old, and it actually started to heal. So they had to go back in and re-break it and set it, break it and then reset it to straighten it out and make a clear path. So I was out for that, definitely. In fact, the doctors, when they talk to you about any kind of impending surgery, they, at least the ones that I have had not, and they're not major, 5-hour kind of procedures. But once again, I say minor surgery, but I think whenever you're knocked out, whenever you are given general anesthesia, it's more than just minor. I mean, this was a very simple operation, and it wasn't life-threatening in any way, both to correct what was being taken out or the surgery itself. So I consider that minor. But I'm sure that if you talk to a surgeon, it's any surgery where you are put out with general anesthesia is major surgery, in that, you are being, majorly put to sleep here, to the point where you need help breathing. If you're having any kind of surgery and they tell you that they're going to put a tube down your throat, that means they are helping you breathe. They are allowing you to breathe. You are so knocked out that you can't even breathe on your own. That's pretty deep. And so, yeah, so, I mean, whenever you're not able to breathe on your own again, for a while at least, that's fairly serious, right? We've been hearing about all these people on COVID that had to have, serious situations because they couldn't breathe on their own, right? And they had to put a tube down their throat. So that was serious enough, and many of those people died. So, thankfully, in a surgical situation, you are being monitored closely by several people, and they are, giving you the desired amounts, and you're being monitored with your blood pressure and your breathing and everything else, and your heart rate and your brain, wavelengths and things like that. So hopefully it's as controlled as can be. But let's face it, for a while there, you're kind of at the mercy of machines and people and drugs. So yeah, for a good portion, you have surrendered your consciousness. So I don't know. I guess to term anything minor surgery, maybe minor surgery sounds good to the person who's being operated on. It makes it sound less less dangerous, less risky, because anytime you go into surgery, you're a little apprehensive, right? Even if you have the utmost confidence in the people that are working on you. Maybe there really is no such thing as minor surgery, right? But I'll take the minor out and say I had surgery done. But thankfully, it wasn't a long surgery, maybe 2.5 hours, which still is long enough time for you to be, when you're knocked out and not breathing on your own, right? 2.5 hours is pretty long. But anyway, so, hopefully I sound, strong. And the usual, manner, whatever you want to call it. But yeah, and it's been 2 weeks since the surgery. But it did take a while to recover from the anesthesia. It wasn't just like, you know, I was in the hospital for about a day and a half or so after the surgery, just to make sure. Thankfully, it was the surgery went very well. No complications. I had minimal pain. Didn't have to take any serious narcotic pain-killing drugs. Just took some Tylenol to manage the pain. So that went well. Got out. I was up and walking, you know, soon afterward. I didn't have any kind of nausea or side effects from the general anesthesia, thankfully. So all when all was said and done, considering that I did have surgery, I really couldn't have asked for a better experience. But it does, but I tell you, that general anesthesia, more than I expected, it did hit me in terms of fatigue. I was more tired than I thought I would be. I figured as soon as you're done with general anesthesia, once it wears off, you know, you're done with it. But even though it wears off, it still sort of lingers. And I wasn't aware that, you know, its lingering does affect other parts of the body for a while. You certainly have to do a lot of breathing exercises, because apparently it can shut down some pockets in your lungs. And so as soon as you are awake, you know, they want you to be using this little breathing apparatus that you breathe in and you raise this little thing up this tube, and you keep this other thing kind of suspended, this little gauge suspended, and you try to, I don't know what the measurement is. I know it goes from 0 to 2,500. I'm not sure what the 2,500 was or is, because I'm still actually doing it every so often, not as much as I was initially. And thankfully, once again, I didn't have any kind of shortness of breath or any problems with that. So I'm very fortunate and grateful and thankful to all the doctors who were overseeing this procedure, because I seem to come through it pretty well. And we'll see now what the long-term prognosis is afterwards. No, don't worry. It was nothing serious. It wasn't cancer-related. But I did have something removed. Not something as usual as you would think that you hear of very often. As I said, I did have general anesthesia, and I had a broken nose back when I was 16, but that was so long ago. So it's been a long time. So I've been fortunate. I haven't had any other surgeries. My wife has had quite a few, to be honest. She's had at least 4 or 5. For knee surgery, and she had a growth in her foot that needed to be removed, and she had a gallbladder operation, and she had a few other things, and so she's gone under the knife quite a bit. I've been fortunate, as I said to you, I've had fairly good health for most of my life, and now as you get old, I think as you get older, it's almost inevitable that something's going to happen, right? These organs just, you know, they age, you know, you put some living on them. But I actually had a part of the body that you don't hear about very often being removed. I had an adrenal gland removed. And, you know, this is a small little triangular gland that that sits on top of your kidneys, and its main job is to manufacture and release certain hormones into your body, which are helpful in how you deal with stress and adrenaline and metabolism and other key things. So these small little glands, and thankfully we have two of them, sit on top of your lungs, and they you don't hear about your adrenal glands all that often, but they do perform a very important function, as does most everything in the body. Now, thankfully, we have two of them. As my surgeon said, we are We are equipped with some spare parts. You have two kidneys, right? You have two adrenal glands. You have two lungs, right? So we do have some spare parts, thankfully. And the adrenal gland is glands are something that you can live a normal life with only one. If you have a normally functioning one, it will take over and compensate for the loss of the other one. And we'll, and like I said, it's relatively new here. I might have to take some supplements or something as time goes on. I don't know. But ultimately what happened, I had gone in for, this is about 5 years ago. I went in for a CT scan of my abdominal area. And they weren't looking at my adrenal gland at all. They were looking at my general abdominal area. And in the process of taking this picture, and this is the way a lot of things happen many times, is that when they're looking for something, they find something else as some ancillary thing. So I remember getting the phone call about my CT scan results, and they said, well, your kidneys look fine. Whatever question there was, the CT scan refuted that, and they said, so your kidneys look fine, you've got, the CT scan takes a, they don't aim it right at one spot, it's kind of takes a general area, so if you're taking a picture of the kidneys, as I said before, the adrenal glands sit on top of the kidney, so can't help but getting in the picture, and they took pictures of both of my kidneys, and so they noticed, they said, your left kidney, or your left adrenal gland, seems to have a growth on it. But based on the picture, it looks like it's benign, but it is there. So we'll just have to keep a look on it. We'll have to keep an eye on it. We'll take some, we'll take some pictures of it over a couple of years just to make sure. It looks like it's a benign growth. There's nothing to get worried about. It's not cancerous or anything, but there is a growth there. And we'll just keep an eye on it to make sure it doesn't grow and make sure that everything, Okay, fine. To the point where it was explained to me in such a casual way that I didn't even remember it. I didn't even remember that I had this growth because it really wasn't conveyed to me that there was anything else you needed to do about it. It was there, and that's fine, and as long as it's not cancerous, don't worry about it. And we'll just, we'll keep tabs on it just to make sure it stays that way. Okay, fine. So flash forward about 5 years, 4 years or so, last summer, I got a new doctor. And my files of the last 10 years or so were transferred to her. And I really have to say that I'm very impressed that rather than just making a cursory look at this information, she obviously gave it a close look. And kudos to her for actually putting the time in and doing the job, right? I didn't say to her, even when I went to her the first time, I didn't say, oh, and by the way, I have a growth on my adrenal gland. She went through all the information, and the files, were pretty thick. And she emailed me, and she said, about a week and a half or so after I met with her the first time, and she said, you had a growth on your adrenal gland, according to the CT scan that you took in 2017. And I do have high blood pressure, and I have been taking medication for high blood pressure for several years now. My parents both had high blood pressure, hypertension, so obviously it's hereditary. And so I've been taking a few medications for it, and it's under control, and that's fine. But still, high blood pressure is certainly something that you need to keep tabs on, and it's a pain in the butt taking pills every day. And it could have long-term, effects. not only the blood pressure can have long-term effects, but also taking blood pressure pills over a long period of time can ultimately have an effect on your body. I mean, that's the difficult thing about taking pills. We take pills to cure or treat a specific ailment, and those pills work for that ailment. But in most cases, as we see on television, whenever they do these commercials now for these drugs that are there to help, you know, these other drugs that they tell you, ask your doctor about this, you know. And then they rattle off the side effects that this drug can also have. And you hear those side effects, and many times they're 2 minutes long, and many times these side effects are worse than the actual ailment that the pill is aimed to treat. But for legal reasons, they certainly have to tell you why. And I get that. But as I said, you know, so a lot of times we take these pills. Oh, take a pill. Ah, take a pill. Well, that's fine. And it will. Those pills will work. They've been tested, and they do work. But they also do take a toll on other organs of your body, especially if you've taken them over a long period of time. With time, they can do damage or at least affect other organs or other parts of your body. And so certainly the goal is to not have to take any medications or as few medications as possible, right? So this way there aren't any of these ancillary things that may crop up once you are introducing this foreign thing to the body, right? No doubt, it's good to have some medications that help you treat a problem. But at the same time, you should be aware that there are also side effects that could occur, and maybe not in the short term, but over a long period of time. So my doctor said, this growth on your adrenal gland, and the other adrenal gland was clear, nothing on the right one. She said, but this growth on the adrenal gland could be affecting how it is working. And one result of the adrenal gland not working properly is a condition called hyperaldosteronism, meaning that the adrenal gland is releasing, as I said before, it releases different hormones to help us deal with different things. Stress and blood pressure and metabolism and other things like that. So the adrenal glands are important glands, even though they might be small and they don't have as good as PR as some other glands in the body do or other organs in the body do. But most of the things that are there do have a purpose. And she said, we've been treating your high blood pressure and your weight is under control and other things and your diet. It's kind of a mystery as to why your blood pressure is still high. And aside from the hereditary issues. And she said, this hyperaldosteronism, if your adrenal gland is releasing an elevated amount of aldosterone into your system, if this growth is making your adrenal gland malfunction and pumping out too much aldosterone, that could be a contributing factor as to why your blood pressure is high. And so maybe we want to take some tests to see if you have this condition called hyperaldosteronism. And if that's the case, and if you do have a high level of aldosterone in your system, it's most likely contributing, at least to some extent. It may not be completely causing it, but it may be contributing to your high blood pressure. And considering that we have two adrenal glands and we can live with one adrenal gland, and it seems as your right adrenal gland seems to be in fine shape and working well. If this growth is indeed, even though it's benign, if this growth is indeed impairing how your adrenal gland is working and pumping out too much aldosterone, rather than just treating your high blood pressure with medication, which is fine. But as I said to you before, taking any kind of medication, you do run risks over the long haul, over 10, 15, 20, 30 years, of doing some potentially other damage to other organs because of the medication. It's curing, it's keeping your blood pressure in check, but it's also taking a toll perhaps, and doing some damage. It could do, no guarantees, but it maybe could be doing some damage to you, your organs, over the long haul if you take blood pressure medications for 30 or 40 or 50 years. And so the question is, do you want to just keep treating the problem? Even if you have this hyperaldosteronism, it was explained to me, it can be treated with other medications, or it can be solved with removing the adrenal gland, removing the problem. So if your body, if your adrenal gland is malfunctioning and it is pumping out too much aldosterone, yes, we can treat it, but then you may also be getting other ancillary side effects from yet another medication. We're already treating your high blood pressure. Now we're going to be adding some more medication to treat your hyperaldosteronism if you have it. So if you do have it, another option is to surgically remove the source of the problem. You can live on one adrenal gland, but you can take out this malfunctioning one, and if it is indeed pumping out too much aldosterone that's causing your blood pressure to be high, we would be solving the problem in some extent, or at least addressing the problem, as opposed to simply treating it. And they said to me that, given that I'm relatively young, if I was 10 or 15 years older, they probably wouldn't even have suggested I have the surgery. Because I might not really, experience a long-term advantage of not having to take medication for that many years. But since I'm relatively young, they said, if you're cut down on taking the blood pressure medication and not taking any aldosterone medication, you can certainly lower your risk for any potential problems that those kind of medications may contribute to as the years go on, cardiac problems and other things, kidney problems, those kidneys, they do get a workout, everything goes through those kidneys. So, you certainly want to keep your kidneys in good shape too. So, but first things first, let's see if you have this hyperaldosteronism. And then after that, we can decide what to do if you indeed have it. Do you want to treat it with medication or do you want to remove it? But that's down the road. So last year, I had a battery of tests. Oh, my gosh. I had a battery of tests. I had different pictures taken, and I had different blood tests taken. I was poked and jabbed, and I had one test where I was in an outpatient facility, comfortable in a bed, but I was basically just had an IV on me, and for 8 hours, 7.5, 8 hours, I just sat there while they pumped in saline into me for 8 hours. And the idea was to see how my body was reacting to this much water intake. Was my blood pressure going up? Was my body adjusting to it? Were the hormones that control your blood pressure working correctly when all this sustained input was coming in? And then I said I had several blood tests. I had CT scans. I had I think I may have had an MRI. I had a lot of things done last summer, and of course, in my situation, right? Every test that came back showed an elevated level of aldosterone, but nothing off the charts, right? Not like crazy, but certainly above normal. And significantly above normal, not just a tad above normal, but not, you know, over the top as well. So right in that gray area, which of course was not going to make the decision for me whether to treat it medically or to have it removed, wasn't going to really make that decision very simple. Now, as I said before, nobody wants to go into surgery, right? It's easier to take a pill than it is to go into surgery and have something removed. So certainly, most people, you know, if given the opportunity or the option to have something treated or something surgically removed, most people would probably choose the medication. But at the same time, removing the adrenal gland is a much more proactive kind of thing to, yes, it's more painful and there's more, you know, the whole surgical situation, you know, post-surgery and pre-surgery is much more taxing and you know, scary, whatever you want to call it. But it also may have long-term benefits. As I said before, as opposed to just simply treating it with medication and ultimately perhaps, you know, contributing to other things somewhere down the line. But the fact that my aldosterone levels were not, you know, these results from all these different tests were not coming back like, oh, no brainer. Wow, this you have, you know, this you know, there was certainly an elevated level of aldosterone, which could be contributing to my high blood pressure, but it wasn't a slam dunk. Which, like I said, then of course is now going to add to the decision making because it's not a no brainer, right? It's right in that gray area there. It's like it's higher than it should be. So there is cause for concern, but it's not five times as much or 10 times as much where you say, oh my gosh, you know, you don't even have a choice. We have to get this thing out of you. It's life threatening. So there's one final test. I took a battery of tests, blood tests and CT scans and other pictures and this saline being pumped into me. And everything came back showing, yes, you know, it's elevated. It was elevated enough to say we should continue to take some tests. And within the world of endocrinology, once again, a new word that I didn't even know existed. And those of you who have had any thyroid problems, you've probably gone to an endocrinologist. Well, suddenly I had to go to an endocrinologist, and that's the doctor who was prescribing and analyzing and diagnosing the results of all these different tests on my adrenal gland. So, you know, now I had an endocrinologist added to the list of doctors, right? Because once again, you hang around long enough. So the endocrinologist was very methodical and, you know, very transparent upfront. Here's the situation. I would, you know, these tests are coming back. They're showing heightened levels. They're not over the top levels, but to really be sure, you know, if these other tests had shown nothing or low levels, they would have stopped. But every test I came back, they were more than normal, more enough than normal to try to narrow this down and get a better view of it. But it not crazy. Like, oh my gosh, yeah, we took one test and there's no question. You've got this hyperaldosteronism and that, you know, that adrenal gland is going crazy. It wasn't completely out of whack, but it was malfunctioning to some extent. So finally, there was this one last test. And all the other tests, aside from an IV, pumping the saline into you, which, you know, after they get the needle in, it's you're just sort of sitting there. And these other things were all blood tests and pictures, so it wasn't that a big deal. But this final test, this test is like the test to determine how the adrenal gland is performing and what it is literally pumping out and taking in. And this test was invasive. And so I did have to think about this one. Because once again, I probably had enough, they had enough information before this final ultimate test, which would give them the true reading, more than the pictures, more than the blood tests, and even more than the saline test. But it was invasive because what they were actually going to do was go into the adrenal gland itself, to the vein, you know, and see and measure the amount of aldosterone that was coming, you know, right out of the gland. Because, you know, you take a blood test and it will certainly show levels of different things. But don't forget, you know, it's kind of a snapshot and, you know, the blood is going throughout your whole body. So there's a chance that the true level of something is a little diluted as the blood is flowing through your body. So after it's captured in a certain point, and certainly from your arm, a good distance away from the actual gland, you can get an idea whether it's normal or low or high. But the actual exact amount, you really can't get from that. And so while all my tests were showing elevated levels that were not crazy, but not normal, they said there's this one last test that will really tell us, because we're going to go in, they're going to make a little incision into your, you know, your upper thigh. You know, you've heard that before, right? That's where they always go in with, they do an angioplasty, you know, when they try to, you know, check out how your arteries and veins are doing for your heart. And this is the same kind of concept. They would make a little incision in the thigh, upper thigh, and then they would go through with a wire and get to your adrenal gland and then actually take a blood sample out of the vein of the adrenal gland. So you're going right to the source to see what is the level here of aldosterone coming in and out of this gland. So that's the ultimate test. So I did talk to the surgeon who was going to do that. And as I said, I was awake for that. It was a twilight, but I was awake. I remember that. I was watching it, actually, because it wasn't a major, once again, major or minor surgery. I would say anything where you're knocked out and you have a breathing tube, that's major surgery, right? But anyway, so, you know, the idea of being invasive wasn't the most appealing part of this. Because, you know, once again, you know, throughout this entire process, there's still on the table an acceptable non-surgical option of just taking pills. But once again, you know, there's this potential long-term. And who knows how I would react to these other pills along with the other things I was taking. So, you know, but still, I could have stopped it at one point and just said, you know what, it seems like the aldosterone level is elevated even some extent. So let's just start taking some pills for that and stop with this. But I felt that I would like to find out what's really going on. And I would like to, you know, and if it was a question of addressing the problem or simply treating it with medication, I felt like I would, you know, I hope that I've got, you know, 35 or 40 more years left. And so if high blood pressure, which I know runs in my family, you know, if I can do something proactively, for all I know, you know, my parents both had it. Everybody's, oh, you know, your parents had high blood. You know, I knew it, but they were taking pills for it for as long as I can remember. So, oh, it's heredity. You have high blood pressure. But for all I know, like, look at the way they discovered this in me. By accident that I had this growth. And it actually turned out when they took a new pictures of my adrenal gland now. I had that initial test 4 years ago when I took more pictures of it. Now, it turned out I had two growths. They weren't very big, and they were both benign, but I had two growths. So, you know, something was going on. I had no pain. I had no clue they were even there. For all I know, I always had two, and maybe this other one was hidden because they weren't taking, you know, the second time. They took a more specific picture of the adrenal gland. That first time, they were just taking an overview of the entire area. So I don't know where that second growth was. Maybe it was hidden. It was on the other side, so this picture didn't capture it. Only that overall picture from 2017 saw one of them. Maybe I always had two. It was just not visible from that first picture, and because it really wasn't considered dangerous, nothing more was done. But when they took a specific picture now, 4 years later, to see and get a better look at the adrenal gland, there actually were two growths. So maybe I always had two. Maybe over the last 4 years, another one happened. And maybe that's what's contributed to my blood pressure going up and staying up. Who knows? So anyway, something was going on with my adrenal gland, right? So I felt like, you know, you know, you don't want these things, you know, if that gland was susceptible to growths, then, you know, who knows? So if it's not working and it might be vulnerable to something more serious, thankfully these two growths were benign, but who knows, right? Then maybe it is best to get rid of it. So I certainly had kept the removal on the table, even though it was more of a drastic decision than just simply taking a pill. I wanted to consider that because I felt like at this point in my life and my age, since that was mentioned to me, that I would be able to, you know, experience benefit from that if it was removed, and possibly get off some of the blood pressure medication and then not have to take additional aldosterone medication, which I would be. So I'd be taking ultimately less medication, which, as I said at the beginning of this whole thing, is better. You certainly want to take the least amount of medications than you can, right? Just to, so your body isn't reacting to outside stimuli. So I did have a consultation with the doctor that would do this. I think it was an AV something. I can't remember anymore. Adrenal veins, AVS or something, adrenal vein sample or something. I think that wasn't it took about a half hour, and it was outpatient. I went home, and it wasn't painful at all. I had a little, you know, incision, very small, on my thigh that I didn't even know was there. Went away before I even knew it. And so, but this was going to be the test. Now, we took all these other tests over 4 or 5 months, and, you know, all this poking and jabbing and picturing and you name it. And, you know, okay, I promise this is the last one, right? This one's going to really tell us. I'm like, okay, we've gone this far. We might as well keep going. And so we take the test. It went well. Wow, we got great samples. Everything was fine, fantastic, great, no complications. And so I go to the endocrinologist who's, you know, overseeing all these tests. And as soon as I walked in, I could tell the way she, you know, she had the results. I could tell by the way she was talking, her demeanor, that there once again was not a definitive answer. You know, and I said, I knew it, you know, because like I said, I would like to have, you know, taking all these tests, I was hoping that whether it was positive or negative, oh my gosh, yes, it's high, you need to do this. Or no, it's low, we don't need to do anything. I'd like a yes or no answer. And every test was coming back with gray results, right in the middle. Well, but however, but you know, that the So now here was the absolute test, right? This is the one that's going to tell us all. These other ones have been showing us, yeah, it's a little over, but it's not crazy, but we don't know. But this one, we're going inside your body. We're going right to the source and ask the horse, and it will give you the answer that you endorse, right? We're going to go right there and test your aldosterone level of when it's coming out of that damn gland of yours. But I could tell as soon as I sat down that this test was not going to give me that real nice, clean yes or no answer. That it was going to force me to make an informed decision, but not a decision that's a no-brainer, one way or the other, right? And I could tell. So just by the way she was approaching it, and she was, you know, very good doctor, very nice, explains everything, you know, puts all the options out there. I'm very, very happy with the way that all went. And I had been to her enough times where I could start to read her a little. Everybody has a tell, right? And so I could just tell that once again, my results were going to be in that gray area, which you have been trying with all these other tests to get past the gray area and get into a yes or no kind of area, a very definitive area. And she said, well, she said, you know, according to this test, and I don't know what this measurements are, but she said, according to this test, if, you know, if your level of aldosterone is four or above, then we would recommend that you remove the adrenal gland, because it is malfunctioning, and it really is not, it needs to be taken out. It could do some damage to you in the long term, because it's not functioning correctly, and it's, you know, so that would be a definitive. If it's four or above, we would say, you know what, you know, yes, you could treat it, but we would suggest you take it out. If it's below four, then that's your decision. Depending on how below four it is, you know, if it's one or two, it's like, you know what? It's malfunctioning. It's sending out a little aldosterone, not a crazy amount. So we can probably treat this with medication, and you don't need to go through the surgery. So, you know, so if someone says to you, four is the high point, right? Then obviously two is the midpoint. And anything above two and below three is that gray area. Or I'm sorry, is above two and below four is that gray area, right? That area that I've been trying to get past, to eliminate that gray area, taking all these tests and finally this invasive test, to eliminate that gray area and find out a true, you know, diagnosis that says, yes, it's high, or no, it's not. So she said, you know, four is the threshold where we would recommend removal. And I looked at her, and, you know, and I have a nice relationship with her, so I can joke with her, but I looked at her and I said, and so mine's three, right? And she kind of smiled and she said, yeah, it's 3.3. So once again, in the gray area, not low, but not over the top. right in that gray area, so much so that even the doctor, even this endocrinologist said, you know, this could go either way. In fact, since you are below 4 on this scale of aldosterone levels, whatever 4 means, since you're below 4, she said, I don't even know if a surgeon would believe that you should take it out, you know, because 4 is the threshold. And so I would suggest, before you make any decisions, whether to treat it medically or to have it surgically removed, I would suggest that you meet with the surgeon. And I will give him all of your test results and pictures and everything we've done over the last several months. And I would consult with him, because he may just say, no, you know what? It's not malfunctioning enough for me to recommend that you do something, you know, as drastic, because surgery is drastic. You know, it's invasive. You're removing something. So she said, before we make any decisions here, I suggest that you consult with the surgeon, because he may not even recommend that you do the surgery, which then takes it off the table, and we will then be, you're looking for that definitive answer. He may give us that, even though these tests aren't definitive. You're right in that gray area. With his experience of adrenal functioning and surgery, he may say, no, if it's not over 4, I don't recommend you do it. Even though it's close, it's 3.3. It's not 2, it's not 1, it's 3.3. It's closer to 4 than it is to 2, right? But she said he may not say, unless it reaches this 4 threshold, I would not remove it. All right, so now we have to go to another doctor. And another, you know, I mean, they're not going to have a test or anything. Maybe another blood test. I'm not sure what it was. So I go to see him, and he's done, you know, he's done many of these surgeries. He's very familiar with it, and he saw the pictures. He showed me the pictures. He showed me my adrenal gland with the 2 growths on it. And he said that even though it wasn't 4, it was still high enough where he believed that level is impacting my blood pressure, and that he did believe that by taking it out, I would experience a positive result on my blood pressure, because this adrenal gland, and because we have 2 and the other one is working fine. For instance, just as an example, because they took samples from both of my adrenal glands just to make sure to see how they were both working. Because if they were both kind of in the middle, they wouldn't have taken them both out. They would have then said, okay, look, they're both kind of off here, and you have hyperaldosteronism because one is high, but even the other one is even kind of, but it wasn't. My other one is working perfectly. And so to the point where, as I said, from 0 to 4 is on this aldosterone scale, my left one was pumping out 3.3, whatever that means. My right one measured 0.3, right? I mean, so my left one was pumping out 3 times more aldosterone than is normal, and 3 times as much as my right one was, which is normal. So clearly it wasn't working, and clearly this surgeon said, yeah, you might not have reached the 4 level, but you're close enough to it that I believe that, you know, it's got a couple of growths on it to begin with, even though they're benign. But I believe that you will experience a positive overall result and impact and influence on your blood pressure if it is removed. So he recommended surgically removing the adrenal gland in order to get the benefit and directly address the hyperaldosteronism condition rather than treat it with medication. So I talked it over with, and I actually had another a doctor friend explain the situation, and that doctor, like a second opinion, not officially one, but I gave this doctor enough of the key information, and they said, no, that sounds like a reasonable, decision. And my general practitioner agreed with it, and the endocrinologist agreed with it, and obviously the surgeon did too. And I talked it over with my wife and stuff. And so, and as I said, I'm somebody, as you know, if you listen to me long enough, you know I like to solve problems. And so, to me, I was solving this problem as opposed to just kind of treating it. So, we decided to have the surgery. I had it a couple of weeks ago. Everything went well. No complications. Very little pain. Didn't have to take any hard narcotics, just some Tylenol for some pain. Was walking around. Breathing has been fine. My intestinal tract was a little funky for a while. Didn't go for a while, if you know what I mean. Didn't have a BM, as we say in the business, for a while. But moving around and taking some laxatives to help that get things moving around. Now, interestingly, I had no, what's so funny about when you have surgery, they tell you enough, but they don't tell you everything. For you little leaguers out there, this is my only tip. I can't be more happy at this point with the way this worked out. There were no complications during the surgery, post-surgery. My healing has gone very well. My pain has been minimal. I only took, painkillers for about a day or so, and Tylenol, so I wasn't taking any opiates or any, narcotic kind of things. I've got three little scars. It was done laparoscopically. It was removed, so I just have three little scars on sort of my left side, more to my side rather than the middle of my stomach, more to the side. They're very small. They haven't been painful. I have my appetite, everything, I'm slowly getting back into a routine. There's some things I can't do for a while, like lift heavy objects or work out vigorously or things like that. But considering I had surgery and all that implies and all that entails, and I had something removed, no internal bleeding, everything healing well. So I can't really complain at all. I got out of the hospital within a day and a half, no problems. Pain was under control. A little uncomfort, discomfort and a little tender initially, but the soreness has gone away. So I'm certainly on a road to recovery as best as I could imagine. And the doctors have been very happy with the way everything has gone. So they're happy and I'm happy. So hopefully it'll take a while apparently for the body to adjust to the removal of the adrenal gland. So I don't really at this point have a clear example yet of the impact or the influence that it's going to have on my blood pressure. But within another month, 2 or 3 weeks, we'll get a better idea. I take my blood pressure daily, and we'll get a better idea as to how the blood pressure is reading and what's going on in my body now. Without that aldosterone, without the adrenal gland, and then hopefully my medications will be adjusted, and maybe hopefully I'll be even removed from one or two of some of the blood pressure pills that I take. So that's the long-term goal. But I will say this for you little leaguers out there, you doctors to be, I understand. Look, as I said to you before, surgery is not a fun thing. Most people, it's a scary thing, right? You're once again, it's like when you get on a plane. You're sort of handing off your safety to someone else, and you have trust in them, and you trust that they are well-trained and they know what they're doing, but you are putting your trust and your safety in their hands. And there's only, and there's only so much you could do. And then you just have to, give them that trust. And I'm in my situation, I clearly had a good group of professionals who knew what they were doing, because everything worked out. Just like when you get on a plane and it lands and you go, "Hey, nice job, Mr. Pilot. All those years of training, all those tests, all those licensings that you've taken, you know, I for 4 hours I was in your hands. And you got me to my destination safely, and so thank you." It's the same way here. But, you know, there are a lot of aspects of any surgery that we don't always know about. And I think they tell us because they don't want to scare people. They don't want to add any more apprehension to the situation. And they certainly want to give you the, make it feel like you're making the right decision. They don't want to add too many layers of potential problems. But if you've ever seen a lot of surgeries, and now on YouTube you can almost see anything, which is kind of scary. There's a lot that goes on in that operating room. You know, they'll explain this. "Oh, well, we go in and when they explain this to me, oh, yeah, you know, we do this laparoscopically, so there's no big incision." They tell you all the positives. "So you're just going to have three little scars, and we go in with this thing, and we have to move some of your organs. We have to move your spleen and your pancreas over to get a good angle. And then we go in with the, we clip it and we laparoscopically remove it and done." And it's not very... it's not an involved operation. It takes about 2 or 3 hours, and it's not complicated, blah, blah, blah. There are certain risks, of course, with any surgery, but, you know, this is, in terms of surgical procedures, this one is relatively safe, relatively easy, and, you know, done it a million times type of thing. And so, you know, if you have to have surgery, this isn't a bad one to have, right? That was kind of the way it was, presented to me, which once again calmed me, allowed me to make an informed decision. Yes, a little scared, a little apprehensive. You're going into surgery, but at the same time, relatively, but confident that this wasn't going to be some major surgical thing that was going to be very dangerous. And ultimately, as I said before, it would have some. The surgery would outweigh, the benefits I would have in the long term would outweigh whatever kind of surgical post-op implications, discomfort, healing, pain. Hopefully that goes away, and the long-term benefits to my blood pressure and ultimately my overall health from, prevent any kind of cardiac situations or strokes or things like that. So that's what I'm weighing. But I think we all know, even if you watch things on television, that a lot goes into a surgery. And so I understand that if you're a doctor, you don't want to tell the patient how you make the sausage. I understand that, right? Because there's a lot that goes on. And if they were to tell us everything, that we then no one would have surgery. And people would be, passing up situations to really do something positive for their health, whether it was fatal or not. Because they'd hear all this stuff that's going to go on within the procedure. But every surgical procedure seems to be a lot more complicated in not so much the actual surgery, but the preparation in order to perform the surgery. So like they said, they told me, "You will have a breathing tube." Okay, I knew that. They said, you've got an IV in one hand. They may, during the surgery, you won't feel it, you'll be out, but you may have another they may put another IV in case they need to, you know, give you something else during the procedure. You know, that IV will be already ready. So you may wake up and find another IV on your other hand. Okay, fine. But then, you know, and oh, you know, you're going to, you know, they're going to be putting the, you know, the whatever knockout within your IV and blah, blah, blah. Well, that's fine. But then when I was in there, all of a sudden they told me, well, we're going to give you a nerve shot that's going to, you know, in the low, in your back, that's going to help, you know, with the numbing in that area. Okay, that's fine. I didn't remember being told that. And they said the shot might hurt a little. It's in your back, whatever. Okay. Hey, I get an injection. I think I've already told you this. I get an injection in my eye every 2 months. So a shot in the back, you know, it's not like it's going to be some big, it's not like a spinal tap kind of a injection. So they gave me that shot and it was no big deal. But once again, I was, oh, really? Okay, fine. Well, after the surgery, I found out later that during the surgery, I had a catheter, which I wasn't aware that I was going to have. No one told me that. Because after the surgery, I was having some trouble urinating, and I couldn't understand why. And they said, oh, well, you had a catheter. Oh, I didn't know that. It was out by the time I recovered in the recovery room. So that was something that they did, which I wasn't aware of. When I woke up, yes, in fact, I did have another IV on my other hand, which I didn't have going in when I was knocked out with the general anesthesia. Then I was having, I was having a little abdominal discomfort. And I was explaining that to the nurse, and she gave me some Tylenol. She said, well, you know, they put gas in your stomach to blow up the area in order to give them some room to see with the camera, which they're inserting with the laparoscopic surgery. You know, this is all done through a camera. There's no big incision. They're not opening you up and looking at it. So they said, you know, in order to do that, they actually add some gas to your stomach and to elevate the area a little so they could see better. And so that's why, you know, your stomach may feel a little sore because they literally blew your stomach up. So you might feel bloated and have some gas in you, which you're going to have to pass because they blew your stomach up so they can move around and get a better look at to where they're going and what they're doing. Well, I didn't know that. Now, once again, you have a little bloated feeling isn't bad, but I didn't know they were going to blow gas in my stomach and actually blow my stomach up. So, you know, I'm in the recovery room and I feel okay, you know, and I finally get to a room and I'm feeling okay. They've given me Tylenol. Because the pain isn't crazy. I didn't really have a lot of pain even where the incisions were. I'm sure the anesthesia and the numbing things were still working. And so the next day, in the late morning, I had this shooting pain in my shoulder. And it was really intense. And of course, it was my left shoulder, right? So you always hear these stories about having a heart attack, right? Your left shoulder hurts, your chest, you know, first signs of a heart attack. Well, I'm just laying there, minding my own business, watching television, not feeling any pain, a little drowsy, you know, still a little tired from the anesthesia, but not in any kind of dire pain, hadn't been. But all of a sudden, I am getting this crazy pain in my shoulder, especially right in between my shoulder blades. Oh, my God. So I called the nurse and I said, I thought I was having a heart attack. I didn't know what the hell this was. I mean, I got operated on, you know, the lower part of my body on my left side, but why is my shoulder way at the top here hurting? And I called. I said, "Wow!" I said, "I'm having a major pain here in my shoulder." Is this? And she said, "Oh, don't worry. That's normal." She said, "In fact, It's a byproduct of the fact that when they blew the, you know, they put the gas in you and they elevated and blew up your stomach, it affected, you know, your diaphragm stretched. And this is how amazing the body is. So apparently your diaphragm has all these nerves in it, and these nerves go up through your body, through your shoulders, and connect to your spinal cord. And so because you were expanded, your diaphragm was expanded with this gas, there's some ancillary pain as your diaphragm is reacting to that, having been stretched. And so you're getting, even though it happened in your stomach, you get a delay, you get a pain in your shoulder from that. Well, who knew that? I didn't know I was getting gas in my stomach, and I certainly didn't know that a possible pain would be a shoulder pain, especially on my left side. So I'm thinking I'm having a heart attack. So for your little leaguers out there, for your doctors to be, I know that you don't have to tell me everything that is going to happen. Because like I thought, well, maybe my shoulder is hurting, because then all of a sudden my right shoulder started to hurt too in the same spot. So I'm thinking, well, maybe the painkillers that I took for the surgery, the anesthesia is wearing off now. And if I'm, you know, if they had to do these incisions on my left side, they had to get my arms out of the way, right? So I'm thinking, well, I'm on the operating table. Perhaps my arms were above my head for 2 hours. Because if they were, that would be exactly where these pain, my shoulders would have been bent. And this is exactly where the pain I'm feeling in my shoulders would be. So I asked, I said, were my hands, like, were my arms over my head? And that's why my shoulders hurt? And she said, no, this has nothing to do with that. In fact, your shoulders and your arms, you were on your right side, because they're taking out my left adrenal gland. You were on your right side, and your arms were straight out, sort of like Superman when he flies. So your shoulders were not bent in any way. Your arms were straight out in front of you. But no, that pain in your shoulder that you're feeling, we'll give you some, and if it gets bad, we'll give you some stronger medication. But that is a result of the gas that they had to pump in your stomach in order to get a better look. So as I said before, I wasn't aware of the gas being pumped, and I wasn't aware of the possible shoulder pain. Now, I understand you don't want to tell someone everything that's going to go on in that operating room, but I don't think that it would have been wrong to say, we're going, just so you know, you're going to feel a little bloated when you get done because we're going to have to pump some gas in your stomach. Okay. And just so you know, some people get it, some people don't, but you may get a shoulder pain, and that's normal. And if you get that, just call for some pain medication and it'll go away. But you know, that's what that is, because I didn't know what the heck it was. So I don't think that would have been too out of my expectations to just put it that way. You don't have to tell me. Now here's the other side of the coin. That was a real intense pain. It may have been the worst pain I've ever had, to be honest with you. I was talking to a nurse who was a part of the doctor's team afterwards in a follow-up exam. And I was explaining the pain I had in my shoulders. And she said that she had had laparoscopic surgery and they had to do the same thing. And she said she had that same pain in her shoulders. And she said she had a child and that pain in her shoulder was worse than childbirth. So I'm not exaggerating this. And I think that if you're going to experience a potential, maybe you don't get it. Some people don't get it. But if there's a potential to have a pain that's unexplained, that's far away from where your surgery is, and it's going to be pretty intense, a pain that could be at least, at the very least, compared to childbirth pain, as this nurse told me, I wouldn't have any experience in that. I think I should at least get a heads up on that one. And it could be put in a way that's not threatening. It's not going to impose any fear. But just to say, just so you know, you might be a little bloated. We're going to have to put a little gas in your stomach, so you might feel a little, you know, agitation in your stomach for a couple of days. And also, some people get it, some people don't, but you might get a pain in your shoulders, which is connected to that gas thing. So just be aware. If it happens, you know, just know that that's a normal reaction, and you can get pain medication for that. So that's the only thing I would say. If there was one thing that I would say, I was very happy with the entire procedure and everything around it. And I'm healing fine. And as I said, I'm confident that removing it will have the desired effect to positively affect my blood pressure. But in the post-op kind of informational thing, if you're a patient, I do this, I don't care. I encourage you, because I did it and it helped me quite a bit. Ask any and all questions you have. They are there to serve you. Your doctor there is to serve you. Ask any question, as dumb as it may be. If it's on your mind, if it will ease your questions in your mind, if it will ease your apprehension, if it will help inform you in any way, don't be afraid to ask questions. No question to a doctor is stupid. And if your doctor thinks it is, then maybe you don't have the right doctor. Because they need to tell you. And so I asked a lot. I wouldn't even have known about this, what I'm telling you now, if I hadn't asked the nurse and the doctor. What causes it? Why is it happening? And things like that. I wish I would have known beforehand. So all I could say is, if you're a doctor-to-be or you're a current doctor, I understand you don't want to give away all this, every aspect of a surgery, because it can be pretty intense for people to absorb. I get it. You know, oh, we're going to have gas. You're going to have a catheter. You're going to have a tube. You're going to have, whoa, holy shit, what's going on here, right? But at the same time, I think there's a way to at least prepare a patient for what they may experience afterward. At least give them a heads up. Information is power. Now, I was telling someone else this, and they said to me, well, maybe they don't tell you about this pain, that you might get this shoulder pain, because what if you were having a heart attack? What if you really were having a heart attack? And yet you were getting this pain in your shoulder, and you said, oh, it must be that pain, and you didn't really think too much about it. And maybe you didn't call the nurse, and maybe you just figured, oh, well, it's going to go away. And meanwhile, you were having a heart attack. So perhaps they don't tell you about that because they don't want you to just feel too confident that, oh, it's nothing serious. Because what if you were having a heart attack? What if you weren't having the pain associated with your diaphragm, and you were having a pain associated with a heart attack? And you would have just said, oh, well, it's that pain they talked about in my shoulder. And you didn't hit the button for the nurse to come. So maybe there's that aspect too. It's another side I didn't think of, which does make some sense. But overall, I would just say, if I had one takeaway from this, so far, so good, healing well, feeling good about the operation, feeling good about its long-term effects. But I would just say, overall, I had a very good experience in the hospital and since then. But overall, I would just say, on both sides, patient and doctor, a free flow of helpful information to keep both sides aware of what's going to happen or what may happen, even if it's delivered in a way that can be reassuring. It's better for the patient to have more information than less. That's all I'm saying. So, all I can tell you is, I think I made the right decision. I think I made an informed decision. I saw the process through. And all I would say is that if you're in this situation, either now or in the future, do your best to make an informed decision when it comes to your health. Talk it over with professionals. Get a second opinion. Talk it over with your family. And go into it with a positive outlook, because all I know is that's the way I went into it, and I'm feeling good. You knew that I would now. So hopefully, my podcasts will be just as entertaining, just as fun, and just as informative as I present them now and forever with one adrenal gland as opposed to two. And so ends another episode of Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic. Every Monday a new episode is posted at WGNRadio.com or wherever you go to find your favorite podcast. We are there. And don't forget to tell your friends, tell your family, tell anybody who listens to a podcast that your favorite podcast is Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic, and it should be theirs too. Your loyalty and devotion is much appreciated. Hope you enjoyed episode number 327. I'm Jim Tarano. I am here on business. I'm only here for fun. You've been listening to Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic, from the end of the web to your screen, with one adrenal gland as opposed to two.